Welcome to Career Tools. This is Sarah.
And I'm Mark.
Today's podcast, How to Give a Decision Briefing, part 2 of 2.
As always, our content has been crafted by humans and is now certified by the Proudly Human Corporation. The questions this cast answers are, how do I prepare a decision brief? What hidden factors do I need to consider when asking for a decision from my boss? And why should I pre-wire a decision briefing?
If you want answers to these questions and more, keep listening. I'm going to be straight with you folks. Atlanta is only 5 days away, and we want you in the room. The Effective Manager Conference on March 17th and the Effective Communicator Conference on March 18th are two of the most practical, impactful events we run all year. No fluff, no filler, just proven tools and frameworks that have helped thousands of managers all around the world lead better teams and communicate with greater confidence and clarity. 5 days is enough time to make it happen. Visit us at manager-tools.com/register, and we're going to see you in Atlanta.
So we've laid out the situation, which is basically facts. We've told them the options without getting into analysis, without getting into a debate, without talking pros and cons. Now we get to the heart of the brief. Actually, I would describe the heart of the brief as the last R, which is, you know, will you make a decision, a request for a decision? It's just like a close in an interview. But step three is the one that if you do it right, everybody will have their energy around, which is a comparison. And basically, we're going to compare the options you have presented. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I've seen briefings like with as many as 8 options, but I've known a lot of bosses who said, no, we're going to get rid of 3 or 4 of those. I understand why they're in there, but we're going to get rid of those and we're going to limit it down. We're going to limit it to these because I don't want 8 people voting on 8 different things and then having nothing that moves us in the right direction. So you compare the options, but first, in order to get to a comparison, you've got to detail the criteria you're going to use for the comparison. If you want your recommendation to be credible, you have to deliver well the 3 components that precede it. The right options, anything, all that are reasonable to consider, the right criteria, which we apply to all of them, and an honest comparison. Don't get caught with your thumb on the scales towards your recommendation, okay? You're going to have to compare your options using certain criteria, and that's what we're putting together. Those are the 2 key parts of comparison. Actually, comparison is about criteria applied to options.
Yeah. So you're going to lay out your criteria, whatever you believe is reasonable. Now, folks, seasoned executives will likely attack any recommendation based on the criteria and or weighing thereof, rather than simply disagreeing with your conclusion or your recommendation. Now, the criteria you choose to compare options are where to spend most of your time. Again, up until now, the S was a statement, the O was a list of options. This is kind of the meat of it. This is where it gets bigger. It gets more dense in terms of your recommendation. You don't want to skimp in this part. If you think you can skimp to favor your recommendation, as far as other recommendations are concerned, beware. Frankly, you have to get creative, really creative, to favor your recommendation, and it's dangerous.
If you have to get creative against the criteria and the comparison, you're making the wrong recommendation.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And seasoned listeners are going to see right through that. I suppose it's hear right through that. It's not unusual to see weighted comparisons and objective analyses where numbers and or weights are used. That's a different show. But yeah, that's why there's that leveling of the playing field when it comes to comparing options, because they're not all that equal in certain areas. And people have biases and they apply to those things. So we try and get as clear as concrete a comparison as we can. Apples to apples.
Right. So let's say you've picked 3 or 5 or even 10, however many criteria. 10's probably too many again, but that's a different cast. You list all of them and you talk briefly about each one before showing, again, you describe all of them before you show any application of the criteria to the comparison of options, okay? It's just like when you do the options, you only talk options. Now we're talking about criteria. We're only talking about criteria. And then we're going to do the comparison. You don't mention a criteria and then show the comparison across the four different choices you have, and then mention another criteria and show across all four. You're going to end up with a matrix where you've got options and you've got criteria, and you're going to talk about it all at once rather than mentioning one criteria and say, here's how option A stacks up against criterion one and so on. We're trying to stay away from any behavior which looks or feels like choosing or recommending just yet.
Mm-hmm. And folks, you need to think about each of your criteria. A lot of junior managers mistakenly believe that because cost is almost always a decision criteria, that most criteria should be or could be easily stated in a word or two. I mean, cost is a number, for goodness sake. It's very easy to state, but not all criteria can be explained that briefly. Think about cost. Thanks to its prevalence, it comes with a given and widely understood measurement: less is better. So if you list cost for a purchase, assuming you're comparing apples to apples, again, not trivial in many cases, everyone understands what the three options' relative standing is in that category, simply based on a number in that row of your decision spreadsheet. Now, folks, we're also not saying you need a spreadsheet here. We're just illustrating the fact that rows of criteria versus columns of options as a tool allow for clear comparison.
Yeah. I'll tell you, somebody heard spreadsheet on the high seas, heard a spreadsheet. Oh, I thought you said never, ever, ever project a spreadsheet on a slide. And we stand by that. We're using the spreadsheet as an example of the idea of rows and columns, where columns are options and rows are criteria, and maybe they're weighted. And then down at the bottom, you have relative ranking based on each option and how well it fares against the criteria. But now let's think about that decision about putting a retail location on the Monterey Peninsula. Surely location is something that's got to be considered, right? Sure, of course, right? Great. However, location itself cannot be a criterion. Why not? Because there is no inherent understanding of the value of different locations. Cost is cost. Lesser is better, generally speaking. Now, quality might offset cost, right? If it's very low cost, but very high quality, but those things then would be acting in concert. But just saying location, you can't just say, I prefer the one on David Avenue to the one on Lighthouse Avenue to the one near the gates of Pebble Beach. You're not telling them what the underlying criteria, what the underlying value. It might be traffic. It might be a surrounding neighborhood. It might be zoning. There could be 100 things that go into location. So you have to be careful about that. Otherwise, somebody's going to say, you're going to rank them 1, 2, 3, 4. And the one that's 4, which is, let's say, one is highest. And you put one next location next to the one that you recommend. They're going to say, well, what did you include in location? Well, it's just based on, I went around and saw them and that one appears to be the best. Well, we can't make a decision based on what you had in your head at the time as you looked at 4 different locations on the Monterey Peninsula and Pacific Grove. Well, have we looked in Carmel? You're going to go down a rabbit hole real fast and you're going to lose your audience.
Yeah, exactly. And folks, there are two ways you can structure your decision matrix of criteria versus options. The first is to have each criteria explained in detail, including its own measuring standards. And in that case, the criterion itself implies an evaluation of the options, leading to probably either a ranking or relative value standing assigned to each option. So, for instance, in our, again, retail example, if the location criterion were handled this way, as would all the other standards, all would have to be handled the same way, the criterion standard would be location, corner lot, 33,500 square feet, traffic pattern A or B, 11 to 15 parking spaces, total radius income.
X millions of US dollars within a,
right, exactly,
within a 1 mile radius, mm-hmm, for instance, in terms of income.
Folks, that takes way more explaining up front. when you walk everyone through your criteria, but you save time when talking about each of the options' relative standing. Note, you don't have to list, or you don't have to have a list in writing of every single sub-factor, particularly on one as detailed as our retail example today, on the key slide, which shows your comparative analysis. You just have to explain it. And if it's a little bit complicated, providing it in writing is also a good idea.
Yeah. The other option is just to list each criteria with the broadest possible title. Location would be all you'd mention in our retail example when you were walking everyone through your criteria. But now, in each options column, rather than having a ranking or a result of the comparison somehow quantified or qualified, you would have to list the factors associated with the criteria for each option. So using the example and location, you might have in your spreadsheet, I shouldn't be saying that.
Chart.
Let's call it
table.
Table or chart. Yeah. You might have in the field for option one on that criteria, non-corner, 4,200 square feet, traffic BB, parking 10, income 114 million USD. For option two, you might have corner, 3,400 square feet, traffic A, parking 16, income 199 million USD.
Yeah. And neither is inherently better. The first just front loads the evaluation of the criteria and lets you do more, a bit more upfront, and perhaps use more judgment in the comparison. And the second feels a little bit more like fill in the blank, leaving more judgment to the audience. In both cases, the underlying factors of the criteria are the same. It's a question of whether or not you want to present raw data in a table or chart, like version two, or evaluate and then rank the options against a clear, defined standard, which is version one. But again, folks, it is your call. It is your audience. You know how they would prefer to make decisions, what the organizational cultural standard maybe is for these kinds of things. And if you try it one way and you find it doesn't work that well, try it the other way. Maybe the team of folks you're working with is better with version two.
Yeah. Now, look, from a visual standpoint, it is nice to have a slide, provided the options and criteria make it possible, which shows an empty table with the options and criteria where you describe the criteria first, followed by a slide or slide showing each column on the whole table filled in with more data or rankings. This isn't necessary, but I've seen it done. I found it very, very useful. People feel like they're getting a fair comparison. And by fair, they mean everyone understands the rules and the rules are well thought out. If you provide that graphical structure and then fill in each of the criteria's evaluation for each of the options, people say, oh, this is a fair fight. We're talking about the same criteria for each of the options. There's no sleight of hand here or waiting behind the scenes that is making this obvious but not clear to us. And of course, the person who has to make the decision needs to know what he or she is deciding upon. And if you get too clever with your sleight of hand, you may very well regret it when they find out that, well, you really just preferred a corner lot, even though you never mentioned a corner lot was an important criteria.
Yeah. In the comparison step, then, you describe your criteria and then compare each of the options you're considering against the criteria. Now, you have to walk through each option, comparing it to each criteria. And in a big audience, there will be vested interests aligned with each of the options and probably criteria as well, frankly. So don't skimp, don't stint, don't skip over anything, glaze over an area, cover each of them in depth. Heaven forbid you offend the lone supporter of the weakest option, only to have that individual pepper you with questions, derail your presentation, fracture whatever chance you had of getting a coalition to support your recommendation, and then a decision gets made that wasn't the right decision, but it's all just because it called into question your presentation or your thinking, which isn't the case. But again, you weren't clear and you needed to be clear. You don't want to come across looking biased. That's it.
Yeah.
Many of our listeners tell us they wish they could keep better track of everything they were learning in our podcasts. So we made it simple. Every time we release a new episode, we send our licensees the full show notes straight to their inbox. Key takeaways, action items, all of it. Ready to review, reference, or share with their team at any time. If you ever wanted that kind of access, it's available to you too, but only if you become a licensee. Visit us at manager-tools.com/memberships to learn more about becoming a licensee and everything that comes with it.
So now we get to the fourth step. We've done situation, options, and comparison, and comparison has criteria in it as well. And now we're to recommendation. It is not the last step, but it's important to note the last two steps, recommendation and request, go very quickly. Okay? You've shared options and comparison. Now it's your turn to discuss what conclusions you or the team you're leading, if in fact there was a team involved in the preparation, what conclusions you have drawn from the comparison and make a recommendation. Okay. I cannot tell you enough. You cannot give a decision brief without a recommendation. A lot of people I talk to are like, well, I'm just going to leave it up to the boss. No, your boss is evaluating you. Your boss is going to want to know what you think. And a good boss will tell you, if you say, I recommend A and she chooses B, she's going to take you aside and say, here's why. Your weighting was wrong. Let me tell you, we have to have a corner. Or no, we've got to have, you know, so much purchasing power within a 1 mile radius. That's the big thing. I've done this 5 times and this is the first time you're doing it. So these last two steps are really, really brief. The recommendation step doesn't exist to allow you to go over the comparison. You've already done that. Okay. It might be as simple as something sounding like this. Based on this comparison and our clear concerns about location and income, my recommendation is to purchase tract B and build our outlet there. Now, to be clear, the comment we just made about location and income could be a form of soft weighting as an example, right? Mm-hmm. You're essentially saying, I give more weight to that. And that could happen in a recommendation step, but not in the criteria, not in the comparison.
Yeah, folks, please don't ever forget that your professional obligation here is to drive a good decision for the organization. Pushing your own personal recommendation, it's not against the rules, but you've got to be so careful about manipulating the comparison to get the answer that you forever, for whatever reason, desire. Seasoned executives who disagree with your recommendation, if weighted in this way, will destroy you for it. Or if they agree, they're just not going to trust you anymore.
Right.
It's not going to come across as an unbiased comparison, truly coming from like an even keel place, apples to apples. This is objectively the best. It's going to seem like there's some subjective criteria that aren't really part of the weighting, and your feelings are some sort of weight that should somehow apply to the decisions. Yeah, no, don't do it.
Yeah. So just to be clear, folks, the recommendation step is you saying something like, based on what we've just discussed, my recommendation or our recommendation or the recommendation I propose to you is plan A or plan Delta or plan Charlie or plan 255 or tract B, whatever. Okay. Do not then recite all 17 factors that you think make it best.
Oh, okay? Yeah. I like that.
Don't do that. Don't think you're getting another bite at the apple to go through all that stuff. Now we get to the last step, which is, again, my favorite. It's my favorite step. It's not the most important step, but it's the most impressive step, in my opinion. And again, S-O-C-R-R, situation, options, comparison, recommendation, which we just covered, and now request. It's a bit old-fashioned, I'm sad to say, but it's necessary. Too many decisions, as we mentioned earlier, slide into information briefings, right? Too many decisions don't get made because there's not clear closure at the end of the meeting expressly intended to create a decision.
Mm-hmm. And folks, yeah, there is a risk with asking for the decision formally out loud at the end of your brief. But not doing it is a fundamental trashing of the reason for the entire meeting or briefing to begin with, which is to make a decision. That's why it's a decision briefing. Never be afraid to be clear about and then achieving your purpose. Sure, it's possible that someone in the room, your manager, your boss is going to say, we'll get back to you. But that's still better than not asking and hearing later that the decision maker had made the decision, but you didn't hear it because you didn't ask for it.
Oh, burn.
Right? Exactly. Don't feel bad for putting the decision maker on the spot. If they're not comfortable with that, then they're probably the wrong person to be making the decision that you're briefing them on anyway.
Yeah. So how does it sound? It's not hard, guys, but you might want to practice. It's like closing in an interview. You say something like, I've recommended option B. What's your decision? Call them out. In fact, if your boss said, why did you do that to me? Boss, this was a decision brief. It wasn't an information brief. Okay. Decision briefs are supposed to end with decisions. I'm totally okay with you taking more time, but it's your decision and everybody knows it. And I figured if you'd already made it, heck, if we have 5 extra minutes, we could talk about what we're going to do about it.
Exactly. Okay. So that takes us through the model then. And now there's some other factors that we want to consider. One of them being always considering 2 hidden factors. Those are time and risk. And it is small, but it's an important checkpoint to add into your process. Ask yourself for each of the options and for the overall decision, what is the cost or risk of delaying a decision or, conversely, the value of moving more quickly? It doesn't necessarily have to be listed in the criteria, but you have to know what the effect is of a possible delay in the decision.
Yeah, the same is true for risk. Think about each option. Maybe it's a contract risk. Maybe it's a reputation risk. Maybe it's a resource after the purchase risk. Think about it and be ready to address it. If risk or time have a particular positive or negative effect on one option, make sure it's addressed if it's not already included as a criteria. And in many cases, it is included as a criteria. In fact, I've seen decision brief templates that start with time and risk, right? Delay is major negative for this one. Going fast on this one is a negative, something like that.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so that covers that. Now we want to go into using soccer always, longer or shorter versus important, enough or not. Now, folks, we've made this discussion as broad as possible, because these principles apply whether you're briefing the board on a $500 million U.S. overseas expansion or a $1 million photocopier lease. The questions to ask yourself in terms of your decision brief is not whether to apply the concepts here. That's a given. Don't skip this need to come up with a decision brief for the copier and use it only for the expansion.
This is so good.
Because one is bigger than the other. Otherwise, folks, you won't be any good at it when it really matters. If you don't practice with the copier examples, when it comes to the expansion, you're gonna fail. Instead, the question to ask yourself is this a big enough decision to have 8 criteria? Or are 3 okay? Or do I need to weight them? That's the only thing to consider is how many choices we've got, not should I use this process or not. Think of the rigors of the process, not the value of the decision. Use small decisions, including your own, to get better at briefings so that when you're making bigger recommendations, those briefings are ones that you're good at. I mean, you've done before. You've got some practice. You don't want to be doing this the first time when it's a $500 million decision.
Exactly. Yeah. And we'll say one last thing. And of course, we'll have it in the mention section. So it'll be on the webpage for this podcast on our website. Effective decision briefs are virtually always pre-wired. If there has ever been a case for using our Manager Tools pre-wire guidelines, this is it. Pre-wiring could change your criteria, your options, your weighting, if you use it, your factors associated with criteria, the timing, the risk, everything could be changed by a pre-wire. If there's one person making a decision, but she's going to turn to her team for input and they are going to be in the meeting, you better pre-wire this briefing whole thing with each of them first. And if you don't know what we mean by pre-wire, again, you've got to go listen to that. It's also a Hall of Fame cast. I've probably gotten more emails about pre-wiring, and then there's another one called Race Don't Chase, which people had never heard of before. It's just one of those things that it's out there. A lot of people use it, but they don't share it because it's a competitive advantage in their career. And if you don't know what a pre-wiring is, it's if you've ever been in a briefing and the briefing went perfectly and you were amazed that everybody was on board with something that sounded to you like it could have been contentious. You're like, wow, that person's a great briefer. No, she's not. She met with each of those people beforehand, individually, talked to them, and was willing to change her plan, change her recommendation based on their input so she could get their vote. You don't walk into a room like this where people are going to, quote, vote, unquote, Joey air quotes there, and not know where the votes are. And what you do is you give up part and pieces and parts of it to satisfy people, to satisfy their group, their division, their department, whatever, so that everybody's like, yeah, I can get on board with that. I know the boss wants this, but if you'll change this, that will really help it for me. And then everybody says yes. And the story goes, what a great briefer. Nah, what a hard worker in advance.
Yeah, exactly. What a good relationship builder.
So Sarah, why don't you summarize?
All right, let's wrap it up. Folks, the soccer model gives you a simple but powerful framework for presenting decisions clearly and with purpose by walking through situation, options, comparison, and recommendation, and closing with a specific request. You eliminate ambiguity and make it easy for decision makers to make their decision. And don't forget the two factors that live beneath the surface of every decision, time and risk. Ignoring either one can quietly derail even the most well-reasoned recommendations. Whether it's for large or small, this structure scales. Use soccer consistently, and you'll be known as someone who makes decisions easier for everyone around you.
Yeah, you'll be the one picked to give the decision brief. And then pretty soon, you'll be the one picked to make the decision. Decision power matters in organizations, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
Okay, that was great. A lot of fun.
It was good.
Hall of Fame.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us, folks. We hope this helped you. Now help us help others and tell your friends. And of course, follow, rate, and review our podcast. And remember, 5 stars only, please.